Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the More Better English Department here at Car Talk Plaza. Now, we don't know who sent this to us, and as the case with email, the last person to send it, of course, takes credit for it, but this is a list of alternative definitions you may not be aware of.
Flabbergasted. You know what that means? Appalled over how much weight you have gained. Flabbergasted.
All right, I got the idea now.
You got it?
Yeah.
How about this? Flatulence. A flatulence is the emergency vehicle that picks you up after you've been run over by a steamroller. Lymph. Lymph.
Lymph.
To walk with a lisp. This is one of my favorites. Macadam. Macadam.
Okay, go ahead.
The first man on earth, according to the Scottish Bible. Here's one. Abdicate. To give up all hope of ever having a flat stomach. These are brilliant. And bustard. A very rude bus driver. You no good bustard. That's it.
Those are a lot of fun. If you want to call us and talk about your car or offer new definitions for any word that might be in the lexicon, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Kay from Colorado.
Kay with an A-Y?
Yes. Kay with an A-Y.
From Colorado.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people from Colorado simply identify themselves as being from the state of Colorado, and I guess that must mean something.
Well, because the state of Colorado is a state of mind.
State of mind, and it doesn't matter where in Colorado. You could be on the top of a mountain or in one of the oceans that are out there.
Right.
And you would be in the same. Doesn't matter where you are.
Well, actually, I'm on the western slope in a little town called Montrose. Do you know where that is?
Never heard of it.
Of course not.
Well, see, what difference would it have made if I had said I'm from Montrose?
I don't even know where Colorado is.
Oh, you've missed life.
My brother is such a yahoo that I couldn't get him to Colorado if my life or his life depended on it.
I've never been west of Pennsylvania.
Well, that's okay. We don't let yahoos in the state.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, we'd have to sneak him in. Maybe there's hope for him. I don't know. Anyway, Kay, why are you calling us?
Well, I'm calling you because I think I have a problem. I have a 1993 Ford Explorer with 120,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, who lives next door, is 38 years old. It's important I tell you her age. Borrowed my car one evening to take her boys home. They live about a quarter of a mile if you have to walk, and it was dark, and we have coyotes and mountain lions. And
oh, yeah, you don't walk at night if you don't have to.
So we let her borrow the car. She brought it back, and I kept saying, I hear a car, and my husband kept saying, no, you don't. Well, in the morning at 5 o'clock when he went out to feed our animals, the car was in the driveway, and it was still running. He got out of the car and forgot to shut the ignition off.
Really?
Yeah, but she's not a yahoo.
She's a little preoccupied, perhaps.
Yeah. So the car idled for 7 hours or more.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we need to take the compressor and blow out the engine, or if carbon builds up or something.
Why is her age important to this?
Because she's old enough to know better.
Oh, I thought she was having some kind of midlife crisis or something.
I won't tell her that.
But she's a little too young for a midlife crisis.
I know.
Although, I'm not sure with women when it happens.
These kind of things are happening an awful lot lately.
Yeah. And does the car run fine now?
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to drive it very far or very fast because I don't want something to happen to me, and I don't know if there's a bunch of carbon in there.
Forget about it.
As they say in Boston's North End,
forget about it.
But my dad used to say if the car had sat a while, he had to get it out on the highway and open it up.
Yeah, and he was right.
He was right.
His car had a carburetor in it.
Oh.
And
this thing is fuel injected, and it has many devices which are designed to keep the fuel-air mixture exactly right and to change it when it goes astray.
So, well, did it go astray?
It may have, but you wouldn't have known it because you were sleeping.
The computer kept everything going perfectly all night long.
You mean those cars now? I don't have to worry about them.
You don't have to worry about that anymore.
Just drive it.
Just drive it. Forget about it, and tell your daughter that she didn't do anything wrong, and
but not to do it ever again.
Okay, I'll try it.
I mean, if something had happened in the night, for example, if the fan belt had broken, and rendering the water pump inactive, then in fact the thing could have overheated and it could have ruined the engine.
Okay.
But there are millions of engines the world over that run unsupervised for hours at a time, including God knows how many police cars.
Yeah, in front of
you go to a donut shop and you see a police car, they got it locked up. But they don't even lock. Who would steal a police car? The windows are down, the heat's on, the thing's been running for 4 hours while they're in there investigating the latest donut felony. And nothing happens to those things.
Right. And there are stationary engines that literally run all day and all night.
So, okay.
But they do have shutdown mechanisms, which your car doesn't have. For example, if the oil pressure drops off, the engine would shut down for those stationary engines. Your Explorer doesn't have that. But had anything like that happened, the engine would have been melted. The fact that it didn't melt meant that everything worked okay, and you can just forget about it and forget that it ever happened.
Okay. Fortunately, it was my daughter and not our son-in-law that did it.
Or better yet, not you.
Because you already think he's a dope, right?
Because she'd have accused you of having a senior moment.
See you, Kay.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck.
Call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Tim from Cromwell, Connecticut.
Hi, Tim. What's going on?
Well, I got actually two problems, and I'm wondering if they're related.
Uh-huh.
I drive a 1988 Saab 900S, and the two problems are both related to gas.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is when the tank is full, the car runs great.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say beginning at about half a tank, when the tank is half empty, it starts to run very rough. And the deeper it goes into the tank, the rougher it begins to run. It's missing. If you get on a hill, you won't even get up the hill, and a couple times it will even stall.
Are you a half-empty glass guy or a half-full glass guy?
I think I'm a half-empty guy.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, I've had it in, and I've had it looked at a lot. In fact, one guy I took it to kept saying, well, it's either fire or fuel. And after that, the only thing he told me is to replace my gas cap. So that didn't do it, and the problem still happens. And the second problem is, I've never had a car or seen a car that is as hard to fill with gas as this one. When you go to the pump, as soon as you start to pump, if you pull the handle all the way, it just keeps clicking off.
Uh-huh.
This car might take 10 minutes for me to fill up.
Yeah.
Well, I think.
Yeah.
That the guy with the gas cap was on the track.
I thought so, too.
But he gave you the wrong answer. You would have been better advised, at least for the purpose of diagnosing it, to leave the gas cap off or loose.
And see if the symptom goes away.
Okay.
I think it will.
Okay. Do you think the problems might be related?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after all, they're both on the same car.
Okay.
So that's a good start right there.
Okay.
And I think what's happening is your gas tank is not venting, i.e., as you use up gasoline from the tank, if you do not allow fresh air to come in from outside, you begin to create a vacuum in the tank, which inhibits the action of the pump, i.e. the pump is trying to push fuel out of the tank. On this car, the pump is inside the tank.
Okay.
And as it's trying to push fuel out, the vacuum that you're creating inside the tank by having used up the gas and not replenished it with air is sucking that gas back in.
Okay. And would that vacuum make the nozzle click off when I'm trying to fill it with gas?
Well, it could, yes.
Okay.
Not the vacuum, but the fact that the tank doesn't vent or burp itself through an ordinary channel, which is the gas tank ventilation system.
Does anything unusual happen when you pull into the gas station and take off the gas cap?
No, not particularly. Would it be stupid to drive around without the gas cap on?
Yeah.
Well, it would be stupid to...
But we're recommending it. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a test. I mean, you could do it. For example, if you try to climb a hill and the car is sputtering and doing all this horrible stuff, and it's a long enough hill that you can pull over, loosen the gas cap. You don't have to actually take it off. Just make sure it's loose, and then get back in the car and see if it just goes flying up the hill.
Okay.
Then
if that doesn't solve the problem, then it's most likely that the fuel pump is weak.
Okay.
In which case, the problems are unrelated.
Okay.
But if the gas cap remedy solves the problem,
okay,
then you should ask him to look at your evaporative emission system,
because
the vapors are not getting in and out of the tank the way they're supposed to, and that could cause a fill-up problem and the problem you have with loss of power.
Okay, so let's begin just by loosening the gas cap and see if
you may decide to just throw the gas cap away, but we would not. You didn't hear it here.
Yeah, if the car is going to run, I mean, I'll happily drive without the gas cap.
Well,
no,
you can't,
shouldn't do that,
because it's a violation of federal law, and they now have tracked you. They know where you live.
Okay.
So you've got to fix it.
All right, and I will start by loosening the gas cap.
See you, Tim.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Right, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888. 227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Chris from Chicago.
Chris with a C-H-R-I-S?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, nice
that's
and simple.
Good and straightforward.
What's going on, Chris?
Stuff.
Well, we have an 87 Volvo wagon.
Okay.
But what I wanted your opinion on was in a disagreement, my husband and I.
Which Volvo is it?
240.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't
it's
know
not
what?
A 740.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Fine.
Well, you can tell me after this.
Okay.
But we're having this disagreement about saving street parking places, like with a broken lawn chair or with traffic cones.
Yeah.
But this is only after a snowstorm.
Oh, okay.
But see, we have really, it's really tough parking in the winter when there's a lot of snow. And,
yeah, sure.
So people, you know, they dig out and then they save it. And my husband says it's not a good idea. It's kind of, you know, trashy. But I think after you dig out, you know, like a foot and a half of snow, that
the spot's yours.
Yeah.
It should be. I mean, I thought that in the city this was a given.
Well, you know, interestingly, in our fair city, we have a similar problem. And for years, the rule was, the unwritten rule, obviously, was you shovel it, you own it.
Yeah.
And just to ensure that, people used to put things like, you know,
all
lawn chairs, trash barrels, you know, undetonated bombs, you know,
yeah,
any number of things in those spots. But because the neighborhoods have changed so much in our fair city, it no longer applies.
You think not?
Oh, I know not.
Oh.
I know not. In our buddy Pep lives in Cambridge, and it used to be that you shovel out a spot, you owned it.
Yeah.
You shovel out a spot now, it's anybody's.
Yeah, but it gets ugly if you move someone's lawn chair.
Oh, yeah, no, that's for both.
Well, I mean, if it's sitting, if the
especially
spot,
if he's in it.
But if the spot is there and there's nothing designating.
But you didn't shovel it.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, you may have just been visiting someone for the night.
Right.
And you came out in the morning, you had to dig yourself out, and you live 25 miles away. When you leave, it's anybody's. The only way you designate that it is not anybody's is the lawn chair.
I don't think you can legally claim anything.
Legal schmeagle! It doesn't matter what's legal and what's not legal.
Slash your tires!
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, in the north end of Boston, where I go every day.
I
mean, this is a given. I mean, not only is it when there's snow, but they now have taken this to a whole new level.
Yeah.
For example, my buddy Richie, who owns the pizza shop, he needs a place to park his Harley.
Yeah.
So if he leaves for a few minutes, he's got, don't ask us where he got them. You know those highway barrels with the flashing lights?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got two of them.
Oh, yeah.
He takes them out. He puts them there in the parking space. He's going
to
take up a whole parking space for his Harley.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to have enough room to park horizontally. You don't want to park sticking out like that.
No, that's day class A.
So, I mean, it's a given now, at least in the north end, that if you want the spot, you just put anything there to designate. And if you violate the lawn chair law, you can just kiss your tires goodbye. So
the question is, should you move up from an 87 Volvo, considering where you live? And the answer is no. Is that your question?
I guess it could be. Yeah.
I mean, the question could be, is it okay to do this? Is it morally, ethically correct?
That's a good way to put it. Is it morally, ethically okay to do it?
Well, see, in the North End, those questions don't come up.
Right.
It's simple.
And those who question disappear.
You want your tires or you don't want your tires.
And it's very easy to look at it objectively if you don't live there.
Right.
But if you live there, I think the law of the jungle has to apply.
Yeah.
The law of the jungle. See, I think that if it snows and you shovel out and you put the lawn chair, then it's an absolute given.
It's your spot.
It's your spot.
Okay.
So
to really answer your question, you want to have the oldest car possible with the worst tires imaginable.
Well, I don't even know what kind of car I have. So
you don't even know what you got.
I don't even know what
I forgot. Who's on which side? You're the one who wants to leave out the chair?
I do because, you know, I'm the one with, like, you know, my daughter and the bags of groceries.
Exactly.
Of course. No, you're 100% right, Chris. Tell your husband he's completely off base on this one.
Okay.
And you love him very much, but tell him to shut up.
Okay. I will.
See you, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, Tommy.
Yes.
Do you remember last week's puzzler?
No, I don't, but if you give me a hint, there's a possibility that something might happen.
It was about Vinnie Gumbatz and his strong arm tactics.
Oh, was there an unfortunate industrial accident involved?
Yeah, they do happen, you know. I'll have the answer in just a minute.
Built my first car when I was 13. With a washing machine, head dry and nose. Now I got dirty clothes, but my baby, she rolled. Like a sunbathing turtle down an old dirt road. Clearly I needed more power. Lit a fire under a popcorn-filled piece. Those explosive little kernels made my engines internals fly like a tack rabbit, sliding down grease, evergreen. Gotta get done, got to roll up your sleeves.
And even though space aliens add us to their list of humanoids not to abduct whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
Yeah, which I remember now so clearly. How could I have forgotten it? I have no idea.
In brief, our erstwhile mechanic, Vinnie Gumbatz, known by all, and he's, of course, also known for his prowess in arm wrestling, little known fact.
Oh! And coming back to me now?
Leg breaking and a few other things. Anyway, he's asked to set up an arm wrestling tournament at the local watering hole. It's to be a single elimination tournament. That is, once you've lost, you're out. No ties allowed in arm wrestling.
No.
To his horror, 247 people sign up for the tournament, and the barkeeper wants to know how many bouts will have to be fought. Mm-hmm. Figuring each bout takes like 5 minutes, he wants to know at what time he should start the event. So it'll conclude before, say, he retires.
I got it.
So now Vinny's in a tizzy. He's thinking he's got to draw up like a branching tree and count all the branches. And since he can't count beyond 14, he's getting nervous. But fortunately, there's a little guy sitting next to Vinny at the bar, and he says,
7. What does he say?
I know the answer.
Oh, he says, I know the answer.
Vinny says, what? You some kind of genius or something? The guy says, no, but there's a simple reasoning process that will allow you to instantly know how many bouts have to be fought. Vinny says, well, tell me or I'll break both your legs. So the question is, how many bouts have to be fought in order to determine one winner? One winner. So you start off with 247 people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so let's divide that group in half, right? Half of them are going to wrestle the other half. Then you're going to lose half of those people.
Right.
And that half is going to wrestle. Then you're going to, right?
Yeah, I got it.
You could go and do all this. But there's a simpler way to figure it out.
There is. Well, just add up the numbers 4, 2, and 7, which comes out to be 13.
Four.
You divide it by 2, which is almost 7, and the answer is 7.
7 what? Matches? We already had 123 matches to begin with.
Oh, you call those matches?
Yeah, we don't need no stinking matches.
Oh, the answer's not 7? What is the answer?
Well, according to John LaTorre, who sent this to us, he claims that Albert Einstein used this as an example of elegant reasoning. That is, reaching a conclusion in the fewest number of steps in his math lectures.
Really?
From time to time.
He gave math lectures?
He knew a little bit about the topic.
He did.
And here's the answer. Since you can't have any ties, every bout must have a winner and a loser. You with me?
I'm with you.
And since the thing is a single elimination, everyone will lose once and only once, except for whom?
One guy.
One guy.
The winner.
Therefore, how many losers are we going to have?
246.
How many matches are we going to have?
I don't know.
246.
Really?
Yeah. Do the math, as they say. Do we have a winner?
Well,
what,
yeah.
what if you started off with seven people?
Yeah, if I had seven people.
Yeah, would you divide them? You got two, and
the
one.
The answer would be six.
And one guy left over.
Yeah.
Right? All right, so the two, each pair of two fights, right? And you got one.
That's three matches.
Yeah, two and two each. So you have three matches and one guy just hanging out.
One guy hanging out.
All right. After those three matches concluded.
You got three winners and the guy hanging out.
All right, so how many
that's
more matches?
Four people. They're going to have two more matches.
Right,
that's five.
Good. That's five. And then what happens?
Out of that?
You got two people.
I got two people.
You're going to have one match and you're going to determine a winner.
A winner.
Right?
So the answer is six.
There you go.
God, that's good. Who was the little guy sitting in the bar? I know who it was. It was Jack Samuels from Cave Creek, Arizona.
Exactly.
And for having his answer selected at random from among the thousands of correct answers and incorrect answers that we got. Jack is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can purchase anything, or at least any cheap thing, from the Car Talk line of fine apparel and audio products.
Anyway, we will have a new, I think, quasi-automotive puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show.
Yes, Master.
So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask questions about your car or anything else you would like. The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Jared Rockwood from Salt Lake City.
Jared?
Jared, yep.
Jared, J-A-R-R-O-D?
Close, J-A-R-E-D.
Ah.
That Jared.
Jared.
From where?
From Salt Lake.
Salt Lake City.
Got it.
That's west of here.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So what's up, Jared?
Well, actually, I have an old truck. It's an 82 Toyota. It's four-wheel drive. And basically, I had a really bad problem with my throwout bearing.
Yeah.
One day, I went out to drive, and whenever I put in the clutch, it would just start screaming really, really loud.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I have a mechanic buddy who said, that is your throwout bearing. It is bad.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay. And so I also had an oil leak. It's kind of two existing problems. Mm. The oil leak steadily was getting really bad.
Where was the oil leak?
It's towards the back of the pan gasket.
Oh, perfect opportunity to kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And so this is exactly what we do. We go buy a clutch kit.
Good.
And we buy a gasket. We put both of those on.
I smell an unhappy ending here. I'm not sure, you know. Why would he be calling us? Just a hunch.
Would he be calling us just to relay to us a very pleasant experience?
Well, I thought about it, yeah.
Yeah.
That was originally my plan. Except,
so what did you replace? Just the throwout bearing?
No, the whole clutch.
Well, we decided as long as we're tearing the whole transmission apart, we might as well put a clutch in.
Good thinking.
So we put in the whole clutch kit with the throwout bearing and the pressure plate and the clutch.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so I'm driving home, and sure enough, that loud squeal has gone away.
Ah.
It's been replaced with a slight chirp that sounds very similar to the squeal, but just a chirpy sound.
And the chirp occurs when you have your foot on the clutch and you're moving?
It only happens while I'm taking the clutch out or while I'm pushing it in. If it's to the floor, it doesn't make the noise.
And so once your pedal stops moving...
Yeah.
Then the chirp is gone.
Chirp is gone.
I don't think it's the throwout bearing. I don't think it's the clutch.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I think I've got a problem because, one, my oil leak didn't go away. And two, I still have the chirp. I don't know exactly what it is. I had a few friends who have given me an idea, but I haven't got around to.
Well, I have one. Would you like the simple, inexpensive answer, or would you like
definitely the simple,
the expensive junk the truck answer?
Junk the truck.
No, he wants this truck. He's had this truck for two decades. And we're going to give you the simple answer.
You're getting both answers whether you like it or not.
Okay, good.
The simple answer is
forget about it.
that, well, that's the third answer. The simple answer is that the little ball, if you remember when you had the transmission out, there is a fork to which the throw-out bearing attaches, and there's a ball that fork pivots on.
Okay.
Okay, made of steel. And it's held in by a little spring. You remember that? It was a long time ago, huh?
Vaguely. Yeah.
You didn't do this part. You were getting the sandwiches? you were on a beer and sandwich run, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
your buddy will remember it.
You can see that little ball. There's a little rubber boot on the side of the transmission where that fork enters the bell housing.
Okay.
If you pull that rubber boot off, you can see that ball. You might be able to just get in there with a little brush and put some grease on that, and you might be able to get that squeak to go away.
I would squirt it with the little WD-40 first, and then put the grease on it.
Okay.
You could do both of those things.
Yes.
And I
honestly think that the little chirp is going to go away when you do that.
Okay. So it's not a big deal then.
Unless you listen to my brother's answer B.
Okay.
His answer B. Answer B incorporates the chirp and the oil leak, too.
Yeah.
I have to ask you one question. Do you ever have any trouble shifting it?
No, not really.
Good.
That's good.
That's a good answer,
that means
man.
That answer B might be gone. The answer that I was going to give you that would be disastrous is that something called the thrust bearing in your engine is worn out.
Uh-huh.
And if that's the case, as you're stepping on the clutch, you're moving the whole crankshaft towards the front of the car.
Okay.
And that, don't say okay, because this is like...
This is
end of the world stuff, Jared.
Okay for me,
this isn't okay.
Okay. No, he just meant okay. I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Bad.
Yeah. Well, like Roger.
Roger.
Yeah.
Over and out.
Yeah. We're out. All right. So hope it isn't that. Try the grease, and if it isn't that, get yourself a real good sound system.
Okay. I like.
Yeah.
That.
Except for the little squirt of WD-40 and the grease, I would say there is nothing you should be thinking about in the way of doing something.
Yeah, certainly not the thrust bearing.
No, you just forget about it.
Okay.
And just keep driving. It'll drive forever.
Good. That's good to hear.
Jared, a pleasure talking to you. Have a good attitude. Take care.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Who's this?
Hello. This is Carol from Traverse City, Michigan.
Hi, Carol.
Carol.
Hi. Yeah.
Michigan, that would be without an E then at the end.
No, it is with an E.
Oh, Carol.
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Well, where are you really
from? Michigan doesn't have an E at the end.
I'm really from Michigan.
Really?
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 Carol with an E.
Yeah.
You know,
exotic. It really is exotic.
Only one Carol out of 57.
You've been keeping track.
Not keeping track. We've been doing original research here.
Okay.
Of all the people named Carol in the United States only. And it's possessions. Do we have any possessions?
Well, not you and I personally. No, not really.
No.
Now that your dart's gone.
Only one out of 57 has an E at the end. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
you are one of a few. So anyway, what's up?
Well, we have a 1981 Dodge Air Ace car that we bought from my husband's mother.
Oh,
so it's a grandma car.
God, it sure is.
A grandma car.
And
That's good.
Had 61,000 miles on it. She put about 7,000 miles on it in 8 years.
Really? Well, that's why those cars got the reputation for being so reliable. If you don't drive it, it can't be unreliable, right?
Well, we bought it for our teenage daughter.
Oh.
She's very involved in sports, and her schedule is horrendous.
How teenage is your teenage daughter, like 17 or 18?
Almost 17, yeah.
How are 17-year-old daughters?
See, challenging.
I have a daughter who's approaching 17. She's just approaching teenagerhood. And everyone says that teenage girls are more of a challenge than teenage boys.
People that have teenage girls say that, and people that have teenage boys, or maybe it's the other way around. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, because I've just gone through a teenage boy trauma.
How old is he now?
18.
18. So you
and I've only killed him twice. And I'm just wondering, what's going to happen when my daughter is 18? I mean, is it going to be worse?
No, I think it's better. I think they emerge. I think they're kind of in that between time, and then they emerge into these wonderful adults, and you have these wonderful conversations with them, and you
really?
Look at them,
well,
and you think...
as a mother, you will. See, that Tommy won't have that. when Tommy's daughter is 17 or 18...
Then you can
he'll
have wonderful...
He'll be in the rocking chair drooling on himself. So I don't think he'll have to worry too much about communication.
Well, here's my question, and I asked this question of the world.
Yes.
Why didn't anybody tell us about this teenage thing? I mean, you get this little infant thing that weighs about 5 or 6 pounds, and it's so soft and cuddly, and it doesn't make much noise. It does smell bad.
It's just like
I
getting a puppy.
Because...
And all of a sudden, you got an 18-year-old son who's totaling cars faster than you can buy them.
People want to sit back after they've been through it and watch you go through it.
Exactly.
Somebody should tell us about this in advance.
Then you wouldn't do it, and that's why nobody tells you.
I warned my wife. I said, are you sure about this?
But then it's too late.
Then it's too late, exactly.
Even my wife occasionally lately has said, you may have been right.
It's too late. It's too late. It's
but then comes, maybe we should do this again.
But your daughter is obviously a wonderful young lady.
Girl. Oh, that's
good. Here's what's happening. I leave for work really early. I'm a teacher, so it's dark and starry, and I head out to the garage where my car is, and her car is parked by our back door. And as I'm walking out in the middle of the darkness, I hear a funny noise coming from her car. This click, 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 click. And this is going on for days, and her battery keeps going dead, and we find out that the electric door locks are independently going up and down, up and down.
No kidding!
Whether the car is on or off.
Isn't that wonderful?
See, now my brother immediately leapt to the other conclusion that the car was cooling off.
No.
So it means your daughter had just gotten home before you left for work.
It's not that. Well, no, I don't think so.
Because that's the sound that a cooling engine would make. Click, click, clack.
No, you tracked it down to the door locks.
The door locks. And she said that whether she's driving the car, whether the car's on and or idling, whether the car's off, they do this.
Oh, so she knew about it.
Yes, she knew about it, but didn't tell us. And consequently, depending on how much she's been driving the car, the battery goes dead.
Well, of course.
So we were wondering, we don't want to put a lot of money into this car to try to solve some complicated electrical problem. So we were wondering if there's a quick and easy, simple solution to keep this 81 Dodge Aries car going for her so we don't have to spend any more money.
Well, if it were like real cars where there's like one fuse dedicated to one device, you could actually pull the fuse for the power door locks. But it may be that also controls the dome light, the cigarette lighter, the backup lights.
She's already driving with, not a lot of those kinds of things.
So I don't know what else is on that circuit, but that's one option if it had its own fuse. If it doesn't, then you'll have to go and find the relay.
Oh.
And unplug that.
Okay.
And that might be the easier thing to do. And
but
I don't know.
But then you wouldn't be able to lock the car.
Well, you would. You'd
easily
have to do it mechanic, like the old days.
I told her just to put anything of value in the trunk and don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't lock the car at all.
Yeah.
Don't lock it.
You can relatively easily disarm that whole thing by pulling out the relay.
And what is the relay? Where is that?
I don't know.
God only knows.
All right.
If you go to your filling station and ask them to find the relay for the door locks and unplug it, I think your problem will be over. And at the same time they unplug it, they can check to see if there's a current drain anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what's running the battery down, the fact that this thing is kicking in and out.
Yeah, okay. And also, I mean, you might want to consider this very, very unusual concept. You might try fixing it.
Oh, that sounds expensive.
My God, what is he talking about?
It may be that just the relay is bad.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds pretty simple.
Yeah.
And that would be the best thing.
That would be the best thing.
Good luck, Carol.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Tommy, it is time to take a short break.
Oh, work.
And we'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a minute. Pontiac Joe's in our town. He's the best guy around. Drinks like a fish and smokes like a stove. I don't suppose he'll ever get old. Not Joe. Living fast. Running hard. Pontiac Joe lives in our town. He's the best guy around.
Pontiac Joe's got a Bonneville. He was born the same year as Bill. Runs pretty good, don't look too bad. Only good car he ever had. V8 Auto, air conditioning, wide track. Pontiac Joe lives in our town. He's the best guy around.
And even though Mr. Potato Head wishes some kind child would pull his ears off whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, here it is. A few weeks ago, Tommy calls me up one day at work, and he says, our sister Lucille is sick, and she needs some care. Mm. And he says, I'll make her some chicken soup if you will deliver it to her. So after work, I show up at his house, mm-hmm. and he's pouring chicken soup into this plastic container, and he's mumbling something about not being able to find the right cover for it. So we try a cover, it pops off. We put another cover on, it pops off, and he says, well, do your best. I try to put tape on it. The tape won't stick to the plastic. And he says, be careful because you could make a mess with this thing. So I carefully carry it out to the car, my Colt Vista, and I this is the automotive part. And I put it on the floor of the front, on the passenger side.
Mm-hmm.
And with great trepidation, I pull away from the curb. You with me so far?
I'm with you, yeah.
Worried that at the slightest little abrupt stop or turn that's too sharp is going to spill this stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, I realize as I'm driving that my house is between his house and her house, and I should stop off at home and, you know, maybe see the wife and kids and the hounds and maybe have supper.
You're so married?
So, in fact, I do that. I stop at home. I go into the house. How you doing, hon? We hug and kiss. Mm-hmm. Son and I hug and kiss, exchange pleasantries. The dogs come and we pet the dogs, and I have supper.
Yeah.
And I sit in front of the TV, and I fall asleep watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Hours later, I wake up remembering that my sister is probably at the front door, clawing at the door, waiting for her soup. So at like midnight, I say, oh, the soup.
And you go back to sleep.
I go back to sleep. I wake up again at 1:30.
Yeah.
And I hurriedly grab a few old National Geographic magazines and some fruit that we were going to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
And I jump in the car and I drive to her house, which is several miles from my house.
Yeah.
Never once concerned that I'm going to spill the soup. And in fact, I don't spill a drop of it.
Although you were concerned when you left my house.
I was very concerned. In fact, I drive like a maniac.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the National Geographic magazines or the rotten fruit. Now, if you think you know the answer, which you probably...
The answer to what? What's the question?
Why didn't this happen? Why wasn't I concerned?
Why weren't you concerned?
So that's the question. You know, sometimes we say things like, send your answer on the back of a piece of overripe fruit or an old 2x4, and people actually do it.
Yeah.
In fact, in the last couple of weeks, we've received correct answers on a half-eaten apple and a frosted Pop-Tart. / roofing shingle. And given our success, I thought I'd try something a little different this week. So if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or a 47-inch high-definition TV set. I mean,
nice.
There's always one cuckoo that does it, right?
Or two tickets to Honolulu. But, yeah.
That's next week.
I like it. Excellent idea.
And send that answer to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer from cartalk.com. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's the number to call if you want to talk to us. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Dennis in Louisville, Kentucky.
With one N or two?
With two N's.
Two N's.
I don't think there are any N's in Louisville.
Just horses and bourbon, basically. So and not in that order.
What's happening, Dennis?
Okay, my wife has a 95 Nissan Altima, and occasionally I like to try to do nice things and wash it, clean up the car.
Uh-huh.
The last two times I've done this, over the course of the last 6 months...
Pots have fallen off.
Been cold. I break the car. break the car.
What'd you break? I mean, what do you use to wash it with? Like a stick?
I don't know. But a friend said maybe it was too much fluoride in the water. I don't know. But here's what happens. I back it out of my garage, wash it in my driveway, crank it up, pull it back into the garage. The next morning she goes out to go to work, car won't start. Car will do it. Car won't start.
Ah, that kind of breaking of the car.
I got that.
First time it happened, called AAA. They put it on a flat truck, and they hauled it off to the Nissan dealership. We went back that evening, and the Nissan guy said, nothing wrong with this car. Can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Happened again a couple of weeks ago. Pulled in, go out in the morning. Nothing happens.
I love it.
So I say, there's something wrong with this car. I'm not going to take it back to the Nissan guys. I'm going to take it to my gas station. The guys know what's going on.
Yeah, they know and love you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They tell me basically the same thing. They call me at work. They say, hey, car starts. What's wrong? I said, car didn't start this morning. They said, okay, let us work around on it. So they replaced the distributor rotor, fuel filter, and the spark plug.
Good.
Car started good for them when they started this. Car started great for them when they finished this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What am I doing wrong?
Have you washed the car since then?
I'm afraid to, guys. And my wife's not too picky about the dirt.
Well, here's what's happening.
Okay.
Do you close the garage
yeah,
door?
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
Yes, you do. We knew that.
You are loading up the car with moisture. And then you are driving the wet car into the garage and closing the door and leaving.
That's it.
It's like taking an apple and sticking it in a plastic bag, a Ziploc.
Okay. I got that visual.
And what's going to happen is the water is going to can't really leave the garage. And what it's doing is it's permeating, in my opinion, the faulty or worn-out spark plug wires that you have on this car.
Which they didn't replace. We were listening carefully for that on the list.
They replaced the plug, but not the wires.
Yeah, not the wires. And you are right at the time when you probably need wires.
And the,
five years old.
The reason that it started when the dealer got it is that the ride between your house and the dealership was enough to dry everything off. In fact, had you just opened the garage door or left the car outside after you washed it,
it would have started the next day.
Yeah.
So there's.
So you got a choice here. You can either have the spark plug wires replaced, or you can stop washing the car, or you can wash the car and not put it in the garage, or
not shut off the engine. Leave the engine running while you're washing the car.
You can put it in the garage and leave the door open, or leave the engine running. You got a lot of choices here.
A lot of choices.
A lot of things you can do.
Okay, guys.
But I'm going to suggest that if you don't change the wires, the first day it gets left outside in the rain, it's not going to start either.
Oh.
You got to replace the wires, you cheapskate.
See you, Dennis.
I've already put $100 in. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Good luck, man.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
K-E-R-R. Don't tell us how to spell it. Just tell us where you're from.
Okay, I'm from Columbus, Ohio.
K-E-R-R-Y.
Close. I. K-E-R-R-Y.
Oh, you moved from California. You weren't born in Columbus, Ohio with a name like K-E-R-R-I.
You're right. I was born in Kansas City, Missouri.
No, that doesn't
That's
work
even
either.
Worse.
Anyway, what's up, Carrie?
Well, I have a 97 Subaru Impreza Outback Sport.
Mm-hmm.
My brakes are making sort of a grinding noise. It sounds like metal-to-metal grinding when I first apply the brakes, even on a small incline.
Like...
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like metal to metal, like I need my brake pads changed.
Yeah, but you don't. You've had them checked, and they've assured you that they're okay.
Exactly. They told me there was dust in there and that I was, you know, just being nutty and that there was no problem at all. And so, you know, I didn't believe them. I thought they were nutty. And so I went ahead and had the brake pads replaced and had them changed to semi-metallic rather than metallic.
Mm. So these pads that you put on were not from Subaru?
Right.
All right. And so you thought that because you were reducing the metal content of the brakes that
the,
you would
the
reduce
metal
the...
metal on metal sound would go away.
So it should be about half, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're, what, semi-metallic? Is it?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, is it about half?
Yeah, it's about half. No, actually, it didn't change at all. It
didn't change at all?
No.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't worry about it because you know that there's nothing wrong with the brake pads. Obviously, there was nothing wrong with the ones you took out.
Right.
And you can choose to try to live with the noise.
Wait, so if that's true, we go back a few steps. The guys at the shop thought she was crazy. She thought they were crazy. So we've just assured her that it was her that was crazy.
Well, I was trying to break it to her gently.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
Yeah. So
just wanted to make the point clear.
Well, you're not crazy. I mean, you're hearing the noise, but you were crazy to have changed the brake pads.
For no reason.
For no reason. And the truth is that some cars just do this. And you can, there are certain chemicals that you can actually immerse the pads in that can cut down this noise. But it's only temporary. And we have some cars where we've never been able to get rid of it. And it's especially bad if the car sits for a day or two.
Right. Well, you know, it seems to happen more often when I first pull the car out of the garage. And what's really peculiar, I think, is that I have a friend who has a 99 of the exact same car, and her brakes make the exact same noise.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I just initially thought, you know, that one day I was going to be headed down a hill and go careening into someone's front door.
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay, well then.
The brakes will work perfectly fine.
Okay.
It has nothing to do. And
so if you can live with the noise.
Even if the pads were worn out, the brakes would still work perfectly fine for a while. They work great. Metal on metal is great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it beats a foot out the door.
It does beat a foot out the door. So don't worry about that. You're not going to go careening into someone's front living room.
And I would recommend that when you get in the car in the morning, the first thing you do after starting the engine is that you
turn the radio
on.
Turn it up really loud.
Turn it up really loud.
For that first few minutes.
If you listen to the stuff my son listens to, nuclear explosions could be going on around your car and you wouldn't hear them.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. Thank you very much.
See you, Kerry.
Don't worry. Everything's fine.
Be happy.
All's right with the world.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Oh, good. I'm actually on. Listen, I did a bad, bad thing last week.
Yeah.
I did a bad thing.
How bad?
I set my truck on fire.
Oh, that's why you haven't given us your name, huh? Is this still an open investigation?
Did you do this purposely?
No, it's not that bad.
Oh, do you have an alias?
Anyway, my name is Ben. I'm calling from King Beach, California.
Hi, Ben. So what kind of a vehicle did you set on fire, and why?
Well, I set on fire one of those modern marvels of American engineering called a GMC S15 pickup.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to get it started and determine what was not making it start.
Yeah.
So I sprayed some of that lovely etherized starter fluid.
Starting fluid, yes.
Ah, yes.
You know, took off the air filter cover, sprayed some of that in there, and tried to start it up, and it turns over just fine. So I figure the ignition system is working quite well. But I go around to the front of the car, and there's flames inside this central port injection assembly.
Yeah, oh, sure.
So I'm blowing like crazy. I blow all the flames out. Then I noticed that something was burning and dripping off the back of this whole assembly.
Oh.
Okay.
You sprayed the stuff everywhere.
I really tried not to.
You have to be very careful with that stuff. It's flammable, man.
So I ran into the house and grabbed my fire extinguisher.
Good.
Okay, and put this stuff out. But there's dry chemical fire extinguisher everywhere. And, you know, and I have the cover off, so it's going straight down into the fuel injection ports,
right,
or whatever,
right into the, right into the cylinders, exactly.
So I'm, you know, I vacuumed out as much as I could.
Well, that was dangerous. Well, I'll explain why in a minute.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, have I done any permanent damage to my engine by having some dry chemical fire extinguisher down inside it?
No.
No, as a matter of fact, it's a little known fact that that's what they put in the catalytic converters to reduce the emissions. So if anything, you've reduced. No, you haven't heard a thing.
Does it start?
Well, yeah, it, to the tune of $400, I did actually have the fuel pump replaced.
Ah, okay.
Right, so what you did is you introduced a small amount of ether to replace the larger amount of gasoline that the fuel pump wasn't supplying.
Correct.
And that's why it backfired through the intake.
Oh, it backfired.
Yeah, that's what set the stuff on fire.
Ah.
That when the valves opened, the presence of the ether in there caused an explosion to take place in the intake plenum, and it shot back through the intake, and it was burning up your fuel injectors.
And the fire extinguisher chemicals won't do it any harm. I shouldn't, like, go around and look at the oil and get it out of there.
I can't tell you how many times we have had to spray those same chemicals on cars in our shop. I mean, it happens. It's an occupational hazard. Well, cars catch fire.
And you, what choice do you have? You can either let the thing burn or you can introduce strange chemicals. So,
yeah.
And they're not harmful to the engine. But vacuuming them could have been harmful.
And needless to say, they will inhibit the combustion process as they get sucked in because that's what they do. but they will just get pushed right out the tailpipe.
Yeah, I cleaned it out, changed the air filter.
But here's the danger. When you were vacuuming that thing, which is the throttle body, you ran the risk of sucking gasoline and or ether vapors into the vacuum cleaner. And when you do that and those vapors come in contact with the electric motor of the vacuum cleaner,
because which they do.
Because the air gets exhausted through the motor, and that's what cools the motor down. You could explode the motor. You could have exploded your car and your vacuum cleaner on the same day, Ben. Well, you would have looked real stupid.
That would have been quite spectacular. It's just one of those French jobs that you see on television.
Yeah, you don't want to vacuum flammable things.
That's okay. I vacuumed it the next day.
Well, that saved you.
Good.
That saved you.
It's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, luck is good, isn't it?
Luck works.
It's a fine thing.
Yeah. Well, but now you're all set and drive it and don't worry about a thing. You haven't heard anything.
All right.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another precious hour listening to Car Talk.
Oh, you ain't kidding.
It seemed like 3 hours. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Puerto Piata Enchilada Caponata Beef Tostada Veggie Strata Cheese Frittata Sopressata Carne Asada and Ice Salada Lunch for Nada is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our show reviewer is Seamus O'Dull. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our class attendance monitor is Julie Verley. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the slowly thawing aura adjusters in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Please don't drive like my brother.
Please don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1009, waltz through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, all about driver distraction.
Huh? Oh, sorry, I was doing my nails.
See what I mean?
Actually, there's a very good reason we set up a brand new section on driver distraction.
Yeah.
Somehow, all this technology, you know, phones, Blackberries, hair dryers, TVs, is all showing up in cars because no one is stopping it.
Yeah. What's next? Built-in Donkey Kong?
Yeah, you know, so we're starting a driver distraction research area led by a prominent neuroscientist named David Strayer, and he's sharing and collecting information on driver distraction.
It's the driver distraction area on the homepage at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though newborn babies discover their fingers and then stick them in their ears whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.